Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Joe Bedizzle is out. Okay, Joe Bedizzle is out. Welcome back, America. We're going to talk about that. Welcome back, America. This is Cicely. Great to have you join me today. Grateful and blessed to have like-minded Americans tuning in. People like you who care for America. You care for its past. You care for its present. And most importantly, you care about and for the assurance of America's future. To the returning folks and viewers and listeners, thank you so very much for your loyalty and consistency in tuning in. I really do, truly, all jokes aside, I really do appreciate you. To the newbies, welcome. Welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time and for your consideration to tune in. And the ask for everyone, new and returning, is always the same. And that is what? To please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. I am seeing the comments, especially for those of you who choose to actually view me right on YouTube. I'm seeing the comments. I like to get in there sometimes and comment back and just interact because I thoroughly enjoy that. But I truly appreciate that. Like I said, it's official, folks. It is official. The Democrat Party is signaling. It's official, but not all surprising. Okay, it's official, but not all surprising. Hunter Biden did not take the stand, which, of course, was smart on his team's part because of the higher stakes and liability if he was found guilty. If he is found guilty, he should be found guilty. He is absolutely guilty. You are on camera wielding a gun, smoking crack, and laying with prostitutes. It's on film, okay? But it has been quite interesting watching this play out. It is, of course, a no-brainer to not take the stand. As you may or may not know, in the federal system, you're actually punished if you take the stand and then are found guilty. And the way they can do that is they can question, and depending on those outcomes, it can elevate the sentence that would be given for obstruction of justice. Not to mention the scrutiny from cross-examination and perjury. This can be added by the judge in the sentencing guideline range. And we all know that honesty can be somewhat of a challenge for a Biden. You know, honesty, right, can be a challenge for a Biden. Being forthcoming, being truthful, being open and transparent and upright. Not at all a Biden trait. Honesty just simply isn't a Biden trait. Saying a Biden is honest is like saying a sieve is good at holding water. Trusting them is like trusting a paper umbrella in a thunderstorm. Calling them truthful is like calling a snowman fireproof. Trusting a Biden's word is like trusting a fox to guard the hen house, okay? Relying on a Biden's word is like relying on a chocolate teapot. Biden's sincerity is on the same wavelength of thinking as a wolf is a vegetarian. Joe Biden's promises are as reliable as a screen door on a submarine. You know, you get my drift. This has been a savage moment. Hunter Biden returned to his federal gun crime trial in Delaware on Monday. The prosecution and defense team gave their closing arguments ahead of jury deliberations. Hunter faces a maximum sentence, as you know, of 25 years in prison if he is convicted on all three counts against him. The first son's charges arose from a 2018 purchase of a firearm allegedly made while he was addicted to narcotics, crack. The man smoked crack, okay? Let's just be honest. We like to report the savage truth here. Hunter Biden smoked crack, okay? Biden is accused of lying on a federal firearm form known as ATF Form 4473, in October 2018, when he ticked a box labeled no when asked if he is an unlawful user of a firearm or addicted to controlled substances. And as you know, like I said, the man was addicted to crack, okay? Hunter Biden's defense attorney Abby Lowell pointed to prior testimony about his client's location on October 15th through 16th, 2018, in text messages exchanges and suggested FBI Special Agent Erica Jensen didn't know exactly what Hunter was doing at the 7-Eleven so early in the morning. However, the prosecution suggested in their line of questioning that Hunter Biden was trying to reach out to find drug dealers. Sounds more true to me. Pointing to a pattern of previous exchanges, the Justice Department prosecutor Derek Hines tried to establish that Hunter went to New York on October 17th and 18th of 2018, conflicting with Hunter's daughter Naomi Biden's testimony that he could have been in New York around October 15th. Hines then pulled up Government Exhibit 125A, showing text and location data from Hunter's messages and showed the timeline of text and location data to the court. Now, the text chain from October 10th of 2018 shows Hunter arranging a meeting at 7-Eleven with someone, and the name of that person is unknown. Okay. The text chain from October 11th of 2018 shows the same number texting Hunter that they are, quote unquote, at 7-Eleven. Texts from Hunter to Hallie on October 13th about Bernard, who hangs at 7-Eleven. Now, Hallie, who is she? Remember, she is the widow of Bo Biden, Hunter's deceased brother, and Hunter's former girlfriend. Yes, Hunter dated his deceased brother's wife. Oh my God, the Bidens are a mess. And then October 16th of 2018, the text put him near Hallie Biden's residence at 4 a.m. Location data shows Hunter in New York on October 18th. Hines showed an email from Exhibit 19, page 208, and an excerpt from Hunter Biden's book about dealers not working on your time and arranging meetings at 7-Eleven. In attendance to support Hunter and his shenanigans were Dr. Jill Biden, James Biden, Valerie Biden Owens, and Ashley Biden. That's who went there to support him, I guess. Now, here is the list of everyone who is taking witness stand so far. We have Kathleen Buell, Hunter Biden's ex-wife. We have Naomi Biden. We had Hunter Biden's daughter. We had Zoe Kistan, Hunter Biden's former girlfriend. Delaware State Police Senior Corporal Joshua Marley, who responded to the incident at Jansen's Market, the location where Hallie disposed of Hunter's gun. We had retired Lieutenant Millard Greer, who offered testimony on how police discovered the gun at the center of the case. We had Gordon Cleveland, a gun store employee who sold Hunter Biden the firearm in the first place. We had Haley Biden, of course, the widow, like I said, of Bo Biden and Hunter Biden's former girlfriend. We had Edward Thomas Banner, the man who recovered Hunter Biden's gun from the dumpster. We also had FBI agent, Special Agent Erica Jensen, Joshua Romig, a DEA special agent, Jason Turner, a gun store employee. Okay, full gamut. Now, as we wait to see, as if we don't already know, we will wait to see if Hunter actually serves time and faces due justice. Joe Biden said in his Normandy interview, okay, that he will accept the outcome of the trial and not pardon Hunter if he is convicted. But don't place any wagers or bets on that, okay? Save your money, okay? Save your money for gas and groceries. Do not place a bet on that statement. Moving on, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg took a victory lap after former President Donald Trump was found guilty on 34 counts, saying his office did our job. We did our job. And let me quote him. I did my job. Our job is to follow the facts and the law without fear or favor. And that's exactly what we did here. And what I feel is gratitude to work alongside phenomenal public servants who do that each and every day in matters that you all write about. I did my job. We did our job. Many voices out there. The only voice that matters is the voice of the jury, and the jury has spoken. So the 12 everyday, and I'm sorry, he's continuing to speak here. The 12 everyday jurors vowed to make a decision based on the evidence and the law, and the evidence and the law alone. Their deliberations led them to a unanimous conclusion beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant, Donald J. Trump, is guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree to conceal a scheme to corrupt the 2016 election. Remind you, everyone, this is not a crime. At the most, it would be a misdemeanor. Okay, let me remind you of that. Bragg continued in the press conference, adding that such white-collar crimes are at the core of what we do at the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. What a joke. Now, what the Manhattan District Attorney's Office actually does is extend itself as the left arm of the Democratic Party, doing the overt and obvious bidding of Joe Biden as he compromises and politicizes all of our abbreviated agencies in order to remain in power and prevent the obvious outcome of Donald J. Trump becoming what? The 47th president of the United States. That's what all the polls say, okay? That's the evidence we're seeing as he's rallying in California. In California, they're saying F Joe Biden, go Trump. They're buying his hats and they're cheering his name. He's raising all kinds of unprecedented money. It's what all the attendants at his rallies are saying as we see crowds and crowds of people. Now, Joe Biden can't even get four people to show up at his rallies in blue states. And it's what your intuition and your common sense says, okay? Trust your gut. Trust your eyes. Trust what you're seeing when it comes to Donald Trump, you guys. Trust what you're seeing. Those rallies are packed full of people. Ladies and gentlemen, trust your gut. Now, Alvin Bragg has agreed to testify in the House GOP probe about the New York case, but not on their timetable. His office, the House Judiciary Committee's request that Bragg testify on June 13th, his office says that date simply doesn't work. Now, remember, Bragg originally resisted the case altogether. This sham of a case. Remember, he actually resisted this case altogether. But Bragg, having pushed on in spite of his previous position, signaled Friday that he's willing to testify about his prosecution of former President Donald Trump, but not next week as House Republicans proposed. Leslie Dubeck, Bragg's general counsel, sent a letter on Friday to House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan, whoop, whoop, out of Ohio, saying that the DA's office is, quote, committed to voluntary cooperation after Jim Jordan requested Bragg testify on June 13th. Jordan, God bless that man, Jim Jordan wants Bragg to appear in front of his subcommittee investigating GOP claims of weaponization against conservatives within the government. That cooperation includes making the district attorney available to provide testimony on behalf of the office at an agreed-upon date. This is what Dubeck wrote in the letter, a copy to which was obtained by Politico. But Dubeck rebuffed Jordan's request for Bragg to testify on June 13th, saying that there are, quote-unquote, various scheduling conflicts and that the trial court proceedings are currently scheduled to continue through July 11th, when Trump is scheduled to be sentenced. Testifying publicly next week, she added, would be potentially detrimental to a fair administration of justice. I can't believe that she would even say the word fair. You know, can you believe this party? Can you believe the left side? I mean, there are just times that I'm just like banging my head. I can't believe that they use the word fair. In this case, Trump has also vowed to appeal his conviction on 34 felonies in the sham money case, as he should. This needs to go all the way past the appellate court straight to the Supreme. Jim Jordan then flexed back. He flexed back, folks, saying before Friday's letter that he was willing to subpoena Bragg if he refused to testify. He also, in a brief interview earlier this week, questioned why Bragg would need to wait until after Trump's sentencing to testify. Why wait? What's the hesitation? By all means, stand by your actions. If you are just doing your job, what's the hesitation? Why wait? Why put it back? Bragg's office is requesting that House Judiciary staff work with them to figure out a hearing date and provide more clarity on the scope and purpose of the proposed hearing. Jordan, in his letters inviting Bragg and Colangelo to testify, wrote that the hearing would, quote, examine actions by state and local prosecutors to engage in politically motivated prosecutions of federal officials, including Trump's prosecution in New York. Now, I'm all about the questioning. I'm all about questioning these hacks, okay? Bring them in, question them, make them actually speak, but I want some consequences. Although, I must admit, I have to say this, the optics are just as good. Those are working for us. The optics of Bragg and Matt Colangelo having to answer some tough questions and squirming at the Hill would be good for early voting and November voting for our side. The Dems are signaling, folks. They are signaling. Why? Because they're losing and they want to get rid of Joe Bedizzle. Okay, it's time to get him out. I mean, there's no reason why you're seeing now the Democrat press now pressing and kind of writing about Joe Biden and they're not supporting him all of a sudden. Okay, this is not a coincidence. They want to signal him out. We'll talk about that a little later. Fannie Willis. She gives me so much. Fannie Willis, Fulton County. You know what? I love talking about Fulton County, to be honest with you, because I have a whole lot of family who live in the Atlanta area, and they were just so for Joe Biden, and he was so great, and he was a moderate, and he was going to bring the people together, and that Donald Trump was so divisive, and he's a crook, and he's so dishonest. And then you get a Fannie Willis in a way doing the bomb chicka bam bam. Right out of Fulton County. So this, I gotta say, you guys, it really does give me so much to rub this in their faces. I love you, family, but you were wrong. Fannie Willis. She had high hopes to take former President Trump to trial before the November election. But with the latest court decision on her scandalous relationship with special prosecutor, that prospect has never appeared slimmer. I'm loving it. And as you all know, and I like to remind you, Fannie was accused in February of improper affair with special prosecutor Nathan Wade. They was doing the nasty, okay? She was doing the nasty with Wade, whom she had hired to help prosecute on the sweeping racketeering case against the former president. A decision by Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee not to disqualify her from the case is now on appeal, with that hearing slated for early October. Until then, right, early October, and until then, McAfee can take no action in the electioneering against Donald Trump, including taking any time this summer to decide how the Supreme Court's decision in the presidential immunity and obstruction of official proceeding matters will impact Willis's case. Another sham case in Georgia against the presumptive November president Donald Trump. All the legal experts agree and say the scandal could prove disastrous for the case. Now, Clark D. Cunningham, an expert in legal ethics and law professor at Georgia State University, told the New York Times that Willis just stabbed the case right in the heart. Bom chicka bom bom. You got to remind yourself of what they were doing in that office. Hey, savages, have you heard? Have you heard behind closed doors? Biden shows signs of slipping. Let me say that again. Behind closed doors, Biden shows signs of slipping. This is per the Wall Street Journal. Thank God. Thank God we have the Journal to let us know this. Thank God they're writing articles now to state the obvious, right? Otherwise, we would be none the wiser about Joe Biden's cognition. This is such a joke. This was the headline, and the subtitle read this. Participants in meetings said the 81-year-old president performed poorly at times. At times. The White House said Biden is sharp and his critics are playing partisan politics. Yes, because he's just, you know, he's sharp and his cognition is strong and it's great. And only behind closed doors does he kind of shut down, right? The first paragraph starts out like this. Let me read it to you. When President Biden met with congressional leaders in the West Wing in January to negotiate a Ukraine funding deal, He spoke so softly at times that some participants struggled to hear him, according to five people familiar with the meeting. He read for notes to make obvious points, paused for extended periods, and sometimes closed his eyes for so long that some in the room wondered whether he had tuned out altogether. Now, this should feel all too familiar, right? To those of us who are on the right, and actually on the right side, right? Quite frankly, this should feel very familiar to you. If you are on the left or in the middle, it should feel familiar to you, okay? Remember during the pandemic when courageous doctors and physicians and surgeons and other medical professionals were going against the Democratic grain and saying that the mask did not prevent the spread of the virus? Remember that? Remember when they were saying that kids weren't as high a risk for spreading the virus, that we should go ahead and open up businesses because the mask is an illusion, that those who were being vaccinated could still spread it to others, and that there was an incentive on behalf of Big Pharma to scare people to be vaccinated, and that healthy people generally had a 98% chance of getting over the virus very quickly, and the likelihood of them dying was nearly impossible, right? Yeah. Now we have confirmation of what we have been saying all along, that Fauci was a hack, that there is a vegetable running the country. Now, as my boy Rick just said, right, there's a stud and there is a dud. We have a dud in office. We got a dud right now, but we can have a stud. Okay. Basically, it's only pertinent and actual and correct when we admit and confirm versus when Republican conservatives say it. So when Democrats come out and say this stuff, oh, it's a big revelation. Right? Oh, it must be true because a Democrat said it, because the Democrat media said it, oh, because the Democrat physicians and doctors and professionals and politicians say it. When they say it, it's all true. When Republican conservatives say it, we're racist and we're misogynist and we're homophobes and all these other phobias, right? We're hateful people. I can't. I just simply can't. So, okay. Why is this breaking news, Cicely? You say, why is this breaking news? We on the right side have been saying this all along and have been villainized as some big, bad bullies who hate seniors, right? And those on the left have just decided to look the other way and exist in denial. But the Holes, this is what my family did, right? They knew. I've been having conversations about this. And when we were saying, I've been saying, you know, your president is not cognitive, okay? He's swimming in senility. Oh, they look the other way. Oh, you're just hateful. He's doing just fine. You guys are just upset. Okay. But the Holes in Joe Biden's candidacy is becoming so much like a sieve that these truths must come out, with the hopes, I think, for the left that he just steps down. That's what they want. They want him to step down, to which I say, you know what, Dr. Jill Biden, you got to step him down. She's in no way interested, however, in giving up her seat with the title of First Lady. So she will continue to push that narrative that he is sharp and strong and lively and keep him shot up on amphetamines for another 4 years if she has to. Okay. But they are signaling, folks. Like I said, they are signaling they want Joe Bedizzle to step down, right? Their policies, right? What they've been saying is backfiring. And like I said, all these truths are coming out, and it's no coincidence that the media is now starting to report all this stuff. You think Political just all of a sudden decided to actually report neutral news, right? There was an article that stated that the White House is no longer for old people, right? So they're trying to say it's not for Trump or Biden. You think they just decided to all of a sudden become neutral? That's not what's going on. They actually are saying they want Joe Biden out, but they simply can't come out and say that. Okay? Understand what's going on. They are signaling they want Joe Biden gone. They want another candidate because they recognize that nothing is going to change, that Donald Trump and his strength and his popularity and his money continues to grow. All right. So nothing is going to change. These polls are not going to change. These rally attendance is not going to change. He will absolutely be the Republican nominee and he will become president. I'm marking my words here. Let's hope. he becomes president in November. It's not an accident that the Steele dossier, right, was a joke. We were saying this all along. We were talking about the mess. We were talking about COVID. And now what's happening is all that is backfiring. And Democrats are running scared because guess what? They have swung so far left that the public, both Democrat, Republican, and independents, they don't trust government anymore. They no longer trust government. They don't trust what they're saying. And they're recognizing like, whoa, we have a problem here. We need to get rid of Joe Bedizzle. Democrats are recognizing that they're in a crisis and it's time for Joe Biden to step down. And they're using the media and they are using Democrat politicians and media outlets and papers and internet to signal for him to step down. And hopefully that works. Now, let me bring you to local news. And as you know, not unlike New York and California, Minneapolis is deep-seated in corruption and scandal. Now, I've been telling you this. This is where I live. Considering our Attorney General, Keith Ellison, okay, and CD5 Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, let alone our Governor Walz, right? And I have to mention Fry Baby, right? Because those two are absolutely responsible for the mayhem across the country in 2020, right? With George Floyd riots and all the mayhem across our country. It's coming out of Minnesota. Our overall voting history of this state, right? It's no wonder. But what federal prosecutors have called one of the largest COVID-19 related fraud cases in the country, a massive scheme to exploit lax rules during the pandemic and steal from a program that was meant to provide meals to children in Minnesota. This is absolutely scandalous. You won't believe this. In case you haven't heard, I'm going to report to you. I'm going to give you the lowdown on this. Where there is, I like to say this, where there are masses of Dems, there will be scandal. 70 defendants, 70 are to go on trial. The first seven have been in court thus far. So prosecutors have said that seven collectively stole over $40 million in a conspiracy that cost taxpayers $250 million. Now, my money's in that, wrapped up in that $250, so I'm upset, okay? At the center of the alleged plot was a group. You know what, Rick? Your money's in that $250 as well. You pay taxes here in Minnesota? Dang. Okay, so your money's wrapped up in that $250 that they stole. Okay, at the center of the alleged plot was a group called Feeding Our Future. Rick and I know about this. Okay, we're going to let you know. Prosecutors say just a fraction of the money went to feed low-income kids and that the rest was spent on luxury cars and jewelry and travel and property. Federal authorities say they have recovered about $50 million of that $250. Where's the other $200? I want all my money back. 18 other defendants have already pleaded guilty while the rest are awaiting trial. Among them is Amy Bach. She is the founder of Feeding Our Future. She has maintained her innocence, saying she never stole and saw no evidence of fraud among her subcontractors. Okay. The defendants are as follows. Now, I'm going to botch these names, but forgive me. Abdaziz Sharif Farah, Mohammed Jamp Ismail, Abdi Majid Mohammed Noor, Saeed Sharif Farah, Abdi Wahab Malim Abdin. Okay, I can't. Okay, those are the people. Okay, I'm gonna butcher that. Don't cut this out, Rick. Just let it roll. And Hayat Mohammed Noor. The charges against them include wire fraud and money laundering. Mr. Sharif was the only defendant to testify and the only one to call witnesses on his behalf. The food aid came from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and was administered by the state of Minnesota. Nonprofits and other partners under the program were supposed to serve meals to kids. Now, defendants allegedly produced invoices for meals that were never served, ran shell companies, they laundered money, they indulged in passport fraud, and accepted kickbacks out of Minnesota, okay? This is not New York, this is not California, this is a odd-shaped Midwest state way up north in the United States, handing out severe fraud. So the latest in this saga is that on June 5th, folks, listen to this, listen to me good here, okay? Because, you know, I reported on a cat burglar. Now listen to this. Minnesota's in it, in the thick of it, I'm telling you. So the latest in this saga is this, that on June 5th, federal authorities in Minnesota have confiscated cell phones and taken all seven defendants into custody as investigators try to determine who attempted to bribe a juror with a bag of cash containing 120,000, 120 G's to get her to acquit them on charges of stealing more than $40 million from a program meant to feed children during the pandemic. The case went to the jury late Monday afternoon after the juror who promptly reported the attempted bribe to police. Thank God she did that, right? She called the police, was dismissed and replaced with an alternate, right? She was replaced. The incident had further rippled effects before deliberations resumed on Tuesday when another juror was replaced after a family member asked about the attempted bribe. This is Minnesota, folks. This is what it's like living here. Now, listen to how this went down. I'm going to break it down for you. Now, according to an FBI agent's affidavit, a woman rang the doorbell at the home of juror number 52 in the Minneapolis suburb of Spring Lake Park late Sunday, the night before the case went to jury, right? The juror wasn't home, but a relative answered the door. The woman handed the relative a gift bag with a curly ribbon and images of flowers and butterflies and said it was a present to the juror. Now get this. The woman told the relative to tell juror number 52 to say not guilty tomorrow, and there will be more of that present tomorrow. This is what the agent wrote. After the woman left, the relative looked in the gift bag and saw it contained a substantial amount of cash. Thankfully, the juror called the police right after she got home and gave them the bag of cash. It held $100 bills and 50s and 20 bills, totaling around 120 G's, $120,000. The FBI took the bag from the Spring Lake Park police on Monday morning and interviewed the juror. The agent said the woman who left the bag knew the juror's first name. Now, keep in mind, the names of the jurors had not been made public, but the list of people who had access to it included prosecutors and defense lawyers and the seven defendants themselves. Okay, keep that in mind. U.S. District Judge Nancy Brazel and attorneys for both sides learned about the attempted bribe Monday morning. The judge ordered all seven defendants to surrender their cell phones at the request of the government so that investigators could look for evidence. She also ordered all seven be taken into custody. Now, you're smart, folks. Those of you listening and watching in, you're smart. It's not hard to see that someone with access to the juror's personal information was compromised, right? At a minimum, the woman who delivered the $120,000 bribe, they were conspiring with her, right? She had to have known somebody really high up. Now, before the case went to the jury, late Monday afternoon, Judge Brazel ordered them sequestered for deliberations. When one of them called home to say she'd been sequestered, according to CARE TV and KSTP TV, a family member asked, "Is it because of the bribe?" The judge replaced that juror with an alternate as well, replacing jurors left and right in this case. Now, anyone involved in attempted bribe could face federal charges of bribery of a juror and influencing a juror with a maximum potential penalty of 15 years in prison. Now, that's according to the Star Tribune, which is a left-wing hack of a newspaper here in Minneapolis. Assistant U.S. Attorney Joseph Thompson told the court Monday, and I quote, "This is completely beyond the pale. This is outrageous behavior. This is stuff that happens in mob movies." Burrell called it a troubling and upsetting accusation. Allow me to let you know this. This is the stuff that happens in mob movies, yes, but it also happens in blue states. It happens here in Minnesota. States where defund the police is born, and states where illegals are flown in and take jobs and are giving voting rights and health care and debit cards and housing at the expense of American taxpayers. It happens in states where the attorney general posts his accolades for Antifa. And one of the district five, to be exact, CD5, is the most famed squad member, Ilhan Omar. It happens in states like that. As I said, where there are blue cities and Democrats, there will be scandal. And as I close today, I have to feed you some savage truth. Quite frankly, the Democratic Party equals corruption with no shortage of scandals and pervasive misconduct. It's their MO. They relish in high-profile cases of bribery and embezzlement, showcasing a tendency to exploit public office for personal enrichment. Nepotism runs rampant as Democrat leaders often secure lucrative positions for their family members and close associates, undermining meritocracy. This party is still not over the fact, the simple fact, undeniable fact, that Donald Trump stomped Hillary Clinton in 2016, and they are hell-bent on never, ever allowing Republicans back in power because we hurt that bag, right? We hurt those pockets. We interrupted their opportunities to get that coin. Follow the money. Always follow the money. So they will continue their efforts to suppress dissent and transparency, which is evident in the manipulation of media narratives and the obstruction of investigations into their actions. They don't give a damn about public service, only self-preservation and remaining in power. The savage truth is, and will remain, that Democratic Party, with its divisive coalition, one far left group versus another within the party, right, to which none of them agree with each other, it's destructive. And that coalition threatens our country's economic stability. It undermines traditional values and erodes personal freedoms. By eliminating the Democrat Party's influence, the American people, after nearly 4 years of disastrous policies and non-leadership, believe America can return to the principles set forth by the founding fathers. This includes a focus on the things that make us great, makes us exceptional, makes us unique and envied and mimicked. Free market capitalism, strong national defense, and personal responsibility. Finally, they see this as essential for maintaining the nation's identity and ensuring a prosperous future for all citizens. Take it to the polls, folks, in September and November. Take it to the polls, savages. That's all the truth you need. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.